This is KUT Weekend for the second weekend of February 2016. Thank you for listening. I'm Nathan Bernier. Here's what we got for you this week. A vote. Finally, a vote by the Austin City Council on ride-hailing apps like Uber and Lyft.
The council now has 1 week to add its own ordinance as a choice on the May ballot.
The effort to mobilize Hispanic voters in Austin and beyond.
One time we registered 4,000 people. We only got 1% to come out to vote.
And how an Austin public school is providing vocational training for teenagers.
Cosmetology is the career. It's just not like playing with hair.
Those stories and more in this edition of KUT Weekend. But first, a friendly reminder again to subscribe to this podcast if you haven't already, weekend.kut.org. Go to that website. You will find links to iTunes, Stitcher, SoundCloud, and RSS feeds. If you subscribe to us in iTunes, please do leave us a review in the iTunes Store or in the Apple Podcasts app. It helps us out a lot. And if you have any questions or comments, you can email news@kut.org. You can email me, nathan@kut.org. I love to use Twitter. I use it all the time when I'm at work, @KUTNathan, if you want to follow me on Twitter. An unarmed black 17-year-old was shot to death on Monday by an Austin police officer. His name was David Joseph, and he was naked outside in a neighborhood in northeast Austin. Officer Jeffrey Freeman responded to a disturbance call and said Joseph charged at him before Freeman opened fire. And that brought a lot of questions this week, and some protests to the Austin City Hall happened during the Austin City Council meeting on Thursday. Mayor Steve Adler and members of the council, including Ora Houston and Greg Kassar, went outside and met with some of those people. Mike Kanan was there. He's the publisher of our reporting partner, the Austin Monitor.
They called on him to read their demands, and he did without much provocation. I heard some thank yous after he did that. Other than that, I mean, I think there's some folks that are pretty angry down here, but it's very peaceful, very calm.
Later in the afternoon, the Austin Police Chief Art Acevedo held a news conference with leaders of civil rights groups, some of whom had been criticizing him just a couple hours before at the City Hall. He had the NAACP, Austin Justice Coalition, Black Lives Matter Austin, and a group called Measure Austin.
I said that what I bring to the table as your police chief is I don't run away from activists. I run towards activists. And these are true activists. Black Lives Matter.
I'm Kenya Mason, and I'm a part of Black Lives Matter Austin. And I'd like to say on behalf of Black Lives Matter that we appreciate the acknowledgement from Chief Acevedo that there was a problem in how David Joseph was killed.
Acevedo says APD policy requires the investigation into the shooting to be completed in 45 days, but he's confident they can finish it in 30 days, as some of these civil rights activists had demanded. Members of the activist group also called for an outside investigation, maybe by the U.S. Department of Justice, but Acevedo gave no indication that would happen. Austin voters will now have a chance to decide how they want the city to regulate ride-hailing companies such as Uber and Lyft. Austin City Council members on Thursday night declined to adopt rules submitted by a petition that was funded by the companies, and so now the rules will go to a public vote in May. KUT's Audrey McGlinchey has been following this story for weeks now.
The vote, it seemed, might have gone in a different direction. Minutes before the final count, Mayor Steve Adler shared this news.
We have now an agreement with both Uber and Lyft, as signed by Uber and Lyft, that says that if we adopt the initiative ordinance, that they would enter into contractual relationship with the city.
The agreement would have put in motion Adler's badge program, where passengers would be able to choose between a driver who had undergone a fingerprint-based background check or one who had not. Requiring these background checks is what the council initially discussed at the end of last year, but Uber and Lyft threatened to leave over the new regulation. The two companies agreed to Adler's compromise contract, but only if council accepted the rules written by them and submitted by petition in January. Adler failed to rally these votes. A silence fell over council when it became clear that his work would go nowhere.
Gallo, Roxclair, two people.
And eight voted in favor of the rules going to a public vote. Council members who voted for the ballot spoke about principle and about taking a stand against companies they say have bullied the city. Here's Councilmember Delia Garza.
We have continually conceded and conceded So I'm not going to use compromise. I'll say we've conceded to this company over and over again. And the history has been they're not moving.
The council now has 1 week to add its own ordinance as a choice on the May ballot. Without another choice, if voters fail to pass the Uber and Lyft-funded regulations, the rules passed by council in December would go into effect. That ordinance phases in a goal of all drivers getting fingerprinted, with disincentives for those that do not. Audrey McGlinchey, KUT News.
Texas will begin casting votes in this year's presidential race starting February 16th. That's when early voting begins. Primary day is March 1st. And for Texas Republicans, this could be yet another year the Latino vote slips through their fingers. As KUT's Ashley Lopez reports, rhetoric during this year's primary could be making mobilizing Hispanic voters even harder this year.
A good place to start is about 3 years ago.
Barack Obama has been reelected.
The Republican Party just lost the presidential election, and they wanted to know why. The head of the party, Reince Priebus, asked around, and, well, he made a plan.
We're going to be announcing a $10 million initiative just this year, in which it will include hundreds of people in Hispanic, African-American, Asian communities, talking about our party.
That was Priebus on CBS's Face the Nation back in March 2013. His big announcement was that the party was going to get serious about appealing to minority voters, and specifically Latino voters. The 100-page plan said the party had to change how they talk to Latinos, especially when it comes to immigration. Among other things, the report said, quote, if Hispanic Americans perceive that a Republican nominee or candidate does not want them in the U.S., they will not pay attention to our next sentence.
Every observation they made from that study has pretty much been forgotten about.
Artemio Muñiz is the chairman of the Federation of Hispanic Republicans, which is part of the Republican Party of Texas. Muñiz says he was in the room when Priebus and others came to Texas to figure out what to do about the Hispanic vote. At the time, Muñiz says he was optimistic. Cut to 3 years later, and Texans will soon vote in yet another Republican presidential primary. Muñiz says he's worried.
And it's a change in his rhetoric. He's actually come more extreme. And, you know, this goes against everything the GOP has actually tried to do in the last 2 years.
Muñiz says he's disappointed by some of the campaign talk around immigration, as well as some anti-Latino sentiments aired during the Republican primary. Muñiz, who supports candidate Jeb Bush for the nomination, says comments from Republican candidates Donald Trump and Texas Senator Ted Cruz have made the work of reaching out to Hispanic voters much harder. And Marcelo Tafoya points out that work was already hard.
Although you may registered, like one time we registered 4,000 people, we only got 1% to come out to vote. That in itself tells you that there is something down deep that they're willing to register to vote, but for some reason or another, they feel left out of the system.
And that feeling is an ongoing problem for anyone interested in engaging Hispanic voters, no matter which party you're talking about. Tafoya, by the way, used to be the deputy state director for the Texas League of United Latin American Citizens, or LULAC, a nonpartisan civil rights group that registers and educates Latino voters. Fidel Acevedo is the director of the group's chapter in Austin. Here in Texas, Acevedo says he thinks neither Republicans nor Democrats are taking this work very seriously, which is why you find Latino voters in Texas staying home on election day.
Can it get better? Absolutely. I can tell you that if we don't get better at it, and both the Republicans and the Democrats work at it and making it better, you'll continue to find this slack of, hey, why vote? My vote doesn't count.
And this is a big concern for people like Artemio Muñiz, who is trying to get his party to appeal to Hispanic Americans, and specifically Mexican Americans.
The way I see it, if the GOP doesn't step up this election and change the way it does its engagement and outreach, the way it wins hearts and minds in the Hispanic community, I think the Republican Party is going to see a long-term negative effect.
When he says there is no electoral math that shows the Republican Party of Texas surviving into the future without attracting more Mexican-American and Hispanic voters. When he says demographic shifts will continue to force the party to take a hard look at how they talk to those voters. The problem in the near future, Muñiz says, is that some younger Hispanic voters might remember what they heard from Republicans during this campaign season. Ashley Lopez, KUT News.
State Representative Donna Dukes, a Democrat whose district includes parts of East Austin, Manor, and Pflugerville, is the subject of an investigation by the state auditor's office over her use of legislative staff to work on the African American Community Heritage Festival in Austin. Representative Dukes has been in office more than 20 years. She says the work was completely above board and did not violate ethics standards or the law. So joining us to talk about this is Terry Langford with our reporting partner, the Texas Tribune. Hey, Terry.
Hi, Nathan. How are you?
Great, thanks. So what prompted the state auditor's office to investigate this use of staff on the state payroll?
From what we understand, her chief of staff was asking questions of the House Speaker's office regarding the legality of having her staff work on planning and organizing of the Heritage Festival. We don't know all the information yet. There are rules and laws that state workers, people who are paid with state funds, can't work on other non-state business.
Right. And the African American Community Heritage Festival is something that happens in Austin every year. Donna Dukes is a co-founder of it, right?
She is. She's been involved from the start. It's been going on in Austin for 17 years.
The former chief of staff you're talking about is Mike French.
Right. That is correct.
You obtained some emails to Mike French from Representative Dukes directing him and other staff to work on the festival.
That is correct. And we asked her about it. She confirmed that the email was hers. She doesn't deny that she asked them to work on a few things, but she's characterizing it more as a when you have time kind of situation. But the email itself doesn't look like that. It looks like you need to drop everything and do this now. That's the big difference here. Lawmakers can tell staff, you know, if you've got time, I've got something I'd like us to volunteer at, you don't have to show up. You can't make it a requirement. I think that's the issue here.
You also spoke to a couple of former legislative staffers for Representative Dukes who wished to remain anonymous, and they spoke about other duties, having to babysit and run personal errands for Representative Dukes.
We spoke to the former staffers, and what they told us was babysitting apparently was part of the regular job duties. Donna Dukes, the representative, says that's not true. But one of the staffers was living with the representative for several months last year in exchange for the free rent in living in her home. She was expected to take Representative Dukes' daughter to and from school, pick her up, take her to doctor's appointments, that kind of thing.
Right. But Representative Dukes said that this was a voluntary arrangement.
She said it was a voluntary arrangement, and there is a great argument to be made that she received, you know, payment for her services in the form of free rent. But there's other staffers that say they, too, had to do it, and they weren't living with the representative. So that can be a bigger issue for her. There are also dog walking duties we hear about, taking the dog to the vet, that kind of thing, too. It's one thing to tell your staff, hey, if you don't mind on the way in, can you pick up a cup of coffee or can you pick up my dry cleaning if you have time? It's another to say you need to do this. And they right. say that's what they were told.
What could be the possible repercussions for Representative Dukes should the state auditor's office find there was some wrongdoing here?
There's a couple of ways this could go. It could be just the report comes out saying we found something happened, but we don't think it, you know, rises to the level of a crime. They could refer to the DA's office, that being the Travis County DA's office. Or we now have an interesting case. The PIU, the Public Integrity Unit, was kind of gutted in the last session. But because this case involves an Austin lawmaker, it still would go to the Travis County District Attorney's office. The PIU could pick this up. locally, the Texas Rangers could investigate. As far as we know, we were told yesterday the Texas Rangers are not investigating. So far, we know that the Travis County District Attorney's Office is not investigating. So that's where it lies right now.
Terry Langford is a reporter with the Texas Tribune. You can read her stories on this at texastribune.org. Thanks for your time, Terry.
Thank you so much, Nathan.
Perhaps you've noticed there's been a lot of talk about Beyoncé lately. She's from Houston, and she almost broke the internet last weekend with the unexpected release of her song Formation and the video that goes along with it. And that was before she performed that at the Super Bowl, where her dancers, all black women, were dressed to pay homage to the Black Panthers. For all of that, there's been a lot of praise. There's been a lot of criticism as well, of course. Lucia Benavides with KUT statewide news show The Texas Standard says it's all an indication that Beyoncé is getting back to her Southern and her Texas roots.
Like right there, as soon as it started, I got chills when it's like showing the row of houses in New Orleans.
Austinite Tandra Louis smiles and bobs her head as she watches Beyoncé's new video for the song Formation.
I love that she says Texas Bama. The shot with the girls in the denim in the parking lot, that's, I feel like that's more Houston. I saw some of my bag swag. Oh, so good. It's so good.
The video shows a police car sinking in water, crawfish boils, black cowboys, women with afros in Victorian-era outfits, and a small black boy dancing in front of armed policemen, with the word "Stop Shooting Us" spray-painted on a wall behind him. These images aren't just political. They're Southern, they're black, and they're proud. At least that's how some fans see it.
Formation to me was just like the celebration and the epitome of blackness and being proud that you are black.
She was embodying everything that it means to be a carefree Houstonian or Texan and a feminist.
Jacqueline Carter and Lillian Bonaparte are both from Houston. They say the new song makes them feel proud to be black women from East Texas. Omisheka Natasha Tinsley says Beyoncé's Houston origins are an important aspect of her black feminism. Tinsley's an associate professor at UT Austin and teaches a course called Beyoncé Feminism, Rihanna Womanism.
I was worried that her public claim to feminism was going to mean an erasure of her regionalism. People are kind of trying to wash out her Southernness and her Houstonness as she's becoming a bigger and bigger global star.
But, Tinsley says, Formation takes that black Southern feminism back.
What I love about Formation is it is talking about what are all the ways that black women in the South have claimed their power.
I'm so reckless when I rock my Givenchy dress. I'm so possessive, so I rock his rock necklaces. My daddy Alabama, mama Louisiana.
The song has been claimed as unapologetically black, but it's also unapologetically feminine. The video shows black women sharing spaces together, dancing, getting in formation, lounging in old Southern mansions, and as Tinsley says, enjoying and owning their black bodies.
From the time that we're very small, black women are taught that anything black about our bodies is wrong.
But Tinsley says Beyoncé creates a space where black women can openly embrace their past, their culture, their blackness, and their womanness. Again, Lillian Bonaparte.
The words themselves, the acceptance of Afrocentric features, Afro hair. She pretty much gave like a middle finger to what I believe white supremacy.
After a year that included the death of Sandra Bland in a Texas jail cell and a young black girl pinned down by a policeman at a suburban Dallas pool party, Tinsley says Beyoncé's video celebrates the black woman's body.
It does feel like there's been a shift in the world, and suddenly the image of black women is that we're alive, we're here, and we slay.
I'm Lucia Benavides for the Texas Standard.
Okay. Now, I go to a barber most of the time, but if you want to get your hair cut or dyed in a salon, especially if you're a woman and you have long hair, it can be expensive, like hundreds of dollars, depending on what you're getting done. But if you're willing to let aspiring cosmetologists at a small salon in South Austin practice their skills on your head, you could save yourself some serious cash. KUT's Kate McGee went under the scissors at this newly renovated salon.
I'm sitting in a black leather salon chair talking to Jennifer, my hairstylist for the day. We're discussing how I want to cut my hair.
What kind of hairstyle you would like? Do you want it?
So I kind of would like, I think some dead ends. It's been a while since I got my hair cut.
Yeah.
So I would like all the dead ends cut off, I don't know, like maybe a couple inches. I don't know how many.
How many inches would you like?
It sounds like a normal hair salon, buzzing razors. Across the room, someone is getting their hair washed. And there are lots of blow dryers. But this isn't your regular hair salon. For one, all of the employees are teenagers. And two, the salon is inside a high school.
Hello, my name is Jennifer Ayala, and I'm a senior in cosmetology and Crockett High School.
Crockett High School is one of more than 100 high schools across Texas that offer a cosmetology certification program. Starting their sophomore year, students like Jennifer learn how to cut and dye hair, give manicures and pedicures, waxing, and more.
Cosmetology is a career. It's just not like playing with hair.
People, for some reason in our industry, assume that we're just the students are just applying makeup on each other and cutting hair. And we actually have a very rigorous high academic standard to where the terminology is high medical scientific terminology.
That's Ida Villarreal, the cosmetology instructor at Crockett.
We hand out our textbooks to the science teachers, which at first their jaws drop when they realize how academic and scientific our curriculum is.
Students must complete 1,000 hours of beauty courses and 500 hours of related high school courses.
Chemistry, biology, anatomy, physiology.
They learn how to identify and treat skin disorders and how to adjust a haircut to look good on all different heads. As Jennifer cuts my hair, she describes these differences.
Like, see right here?
Jennifer points to the top back portion of my head.
Some people can have it bigger, like they can have the crown like wider, and when you're cutting the hair, when it falls down, you can cut more than they want to. So you have to know about the hair structure and everything. And the more you know, the better of a hair stylist you can be.
They also use geometry. Certain hairstyles need to be cut at certain angles. Students must also take a written exam and a timed skills test. If she passes, Jennifer will graduate high school with a certificate and can immediately start working in a salon debt-free. Villarreal says that's huge.
Cosmetology is like college. Outside of high school, this course will cost up to $24,000, so people get in debt to do this.
Jennifer says the program has taught her more than how to cut hair. It's helped her open up. Jennifer says she likes that her teacher, Villarreal, expects a lot of her students.
She treats us like adults. That's something that other teachers won't do. Like, they will baby you, they will do things for you. She doesn't. She goes, you know what, you're going to do this because you're your own person.
Villarreal says it's great that her cosmetology students are learning a skill before they even graduate high school. But she says today's employers want graduates who have soft skills too.
People who show up to work, show up on time, who are accountable, who are responsible, who work with others well, who step up to the plate where they're not having to tell their employees every little thing to do. And that's what the employers need nowadays, and that's what they're asking for.
My haircut takes more than an hour, Jennifer says. She's gotten faster, but she's still learning. Villarreal stands next to her as she removes the cape from around my neck.
Here we go. Voila.
All right.
Voila. Beautiful. Feel your hair.
Oh my gosh, it looks wonderful. Thank you so much. It does feel very soft. Next year, high school students across the Austin Public School District can take cosmetology too. It's part of the district's shared services model, which lets students take classes at other high schools if their home high school doesn't offer it. And the class is growing. Only 9 seniors are graduating this spring, but 50 sophomores entered the cosmetology certification program this school year. Kate McGee, KUT News.
The longest-running music program in television history is now the focus of an exhibit at the Bob Bullock Texas State History Museum in downtown Austin. The Austin City Limits Theater is open right now on the museum's third floor. I spoke about it with Austin City Limits General Manager Tom Gimbel and the Bullock Museum's Director, Victoria Ramirez. What made you decide to celebrate Austin City Limits at the Bullock?
The third floor is a space where we celebrate the 20th and 21st century. We wanted to expand music and pop culture, and working with Austin City Limits seemed like the perfect fit.
Do you think that having a focus of more contemporary history will attract more people to the museum?
We certainly hope it'll attract more people. That's part of our job. We want a museum that's relevant and that people are interested in and excited about. History is happening today. And we need to make sure that when we, as the official State History Museum, are talking about history, we're also talking about recent history.
So did you approach ACL or did Austin City Limits approach the Bullock? What happened first, Tom?
The Bullock approached us. We were honored to get that call and to know that there was interest in the show. So that was a very easy yes.
Walk me through this experience. I know you have a 25-minute video, first of all, highlighting some of the most famous performances.
Yeah, it's difficult to condense over 40 years of television history into a 25-minute or less museum type of experience. But I think the team at KLRU, along with the team at the Bullock, I think we accomplished that. And starting with Willie Nelson in 1974, that first pilot episode.
Whiskey River, take my mind. Don't let a memory talk to me.
Through all the great artists that have performed on Austin City Limits.
Georgia. Oh, Georgia.
Right up to the present day, I think the video reel ends with Sam Smith, so something very contemporary and happening right now.
Sick! Oh, won't you stay with me? 'Cause you're all I need.
It was difficult from a musical standpoint to find the opportunity to feature as many artists that deserved to be featured over four decades. So I think the team came up with a really interesting convention of aligning still images of artists who had performed in the 70s, 80s, 90s, up through the present day. And those still images are appearing on the screen alongside the video clips. And I think it's a really cool experience for the visitor.
And although we had no money, I was rich as I could be.
And Victoria, it's not just a video. There are artifacts too, aren't there?
Correct. The artifacts include the original neon sign from the 1980s and then the tree branch from the 1970s that was always featured in the opening clip of the program. In addition, we added a timeline to show not only the when ACL started, but milestones throughout the program's life and certainly looking into the future.
Victoria Ramirez is director of the Bob Bullock Texas State History Museum. Thanks for your time, Victoria.
Thank you for having me.
And Tom Gimbel is general manager of Austin City Limits. Thanks, Tom.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
Travis kind of took my picture, but nobody did smile. They told me I was going to be here for a pretty long while.
That, my friends, is KUT Weekend for the second weekend of February 2016. Thanks for hanging out with me. You can subscribe to this podcast at weekend.kut.org. If you have any questions or comments, email news@kut.org. You can email me, nathan@kut.org. I'm @KUTNathan on Twitter. If you haven't signed up for Twitter, you should. You can get so much news and information through it. Our theme music is by RAC. Thanks again for listening. I'm Nathan Bernier with KUT 90.5 and KUT.org.
And then